I'm Martha Plimpton, and you're listening to Midday on WNYC and WNYC.org. A couple of months ago, Saudi Arabia's King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud announced that he was lifting the ban on driving for women in 2018. While this is a big step forward for women's rights in Saudi Arabia, the country still has a long way to go. In an article called Body Politics, Saudi Women Push for the Right to Exercise, journalist Sarah Aziza investigated the legal and cultural restrictions on women's movement that have caused dramatically high rates of obesity amongst half the population. The article was published in the January issue of Harper's Magazine, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Sarah Aziza to our show today. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So tell us, when did you first arrive in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia?
I first arrived there actually in 2001 as a young girl. So I grew up there for 5 years, but I've returned as a journalist several times, beginning in around 2013.
So you've been reporting out of the Middle East since then?
Yes, I live in New York City, but I'm in the Middle East about 3 or 4 times a year for some reporting projects.
And how did you hear about the female fitness movement that's happening there in Saudi Arabia?
Well, it's really interesting. I was actually investigating breast cancer. Breast cancer is also one of the leading causes of deaths in Saudi Arabia for women, and that's due to the stigma surrounding the discussion of the female body. So women, only about 25% of women in 2013 had ever heard of breast exams, and there was just a lot of stigma around the female body in general. So
yes.
In investigating that, I opened up onto a lot of more systemic issues that are keeping women sick, sedentary, and confined.
Right. So what are the obesity rates in Saudi Arabia among
right.
the general population, if you know, but specifically among women?
Right. So about 70% are overweight, but around 74% of women are actually obese. So it's that's in contrast with around 30% of men. So the population overall is quite overweight, but women are about double men when it comes to obesity.
And how does that compare to our obesity rates here in the U.S.?
In the U.S., it's actually roughly the same, but we don't see anything like the gender divide.
I see. Okay. So why are these rates so high in Saudi Arabia? What?
Right. Yeah. It's actually a really recent phenomenon just since around the 1970s. So it's really correlated to the westernization, industrialization in the country that came with the oil boom, which is a common trend in many countries. Again, what's so striking about Saudi Arabia is that women have seen a disproportionate amount of detrimental health effects as things have gotten more convenient and more mechanized. Women have been actually more confined, and just that's been reflected in all of their health outcomes. So it really has to do with wealth, but then also the wealth that has propped up a regime that's able to make executive decisions about where women are allowed to go and how much they're allowed to move.
So, wait, when you say wealth, do you mean women who are wealthier are more likely to struggle with obesity, or is that what you mean?
That actually is generally true, but what I was referring to is the wealth of the kingdom in general.
I
so
see.
you can only afford to keep half of your workforce at home if you're able to subsidize and prop up the country's economy through other means.
I see. So that's in contrast to us here in the United States, where we see generally a sort of opposite trend, where wealth can, you know, sort of helps people stay a little bit more fit, and we see people in less, you know, less privileged populations actually having to rely more on fast food and living in food deserts and such like. It's just interesting. So has the government tried to do anything to combat this health crisis?
Only in very, very recent years. So as of 2013, that was when the first Ministry of Health sponsor, like National Health Survey, was conducted to look at some of these issues. And to its credit, the Ministry of Health in Saudi Arabia and other parts of the government have made some efforts to create more awareness around these issues, sort of promoting at least nominally healthier eating and activity. But there was a real disconnect between what was possible for women and what was possible for men in regards to access to exercise and healthy eating.
Right. And so you stayed with your friend Musa, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, am I?
Yeah.
While in Jeddah. And is she struggling with her weight?
Yes. Yeah, so in the piece I describe this housewife that I stayed with for some of my time in Jeddah, and she's been struggling with her weight most of her life, and she's 5'2", but between 170, 190 pounds, which put her medically in the category of obese. Mm-hmm. And that's brought a lot more health complications along the way, whether it's back pain, chronic fatigue, risk of diabetes,
right,
heart disease. Mm-hmm.
And why, just to follow up on this, why are the health implications for obesity for women so much more drastic or dangerous mm-hmm. than they are for men in Saudi Arabia?
Absolutely. Well, it's built into the architecture of the society. Women are very restricted as far as where they're allowed to go traditionally and legally. So there's a guardianship system in place which stipulates that women must have male approval mm-hmm. in order to access certain parts of society, and as well as access certain government services, medical services, things like this. But then just traditionally, many families don't permit their wives or daughters to like exit the house or be anywhere in public without a male escort. Mm-hmm. There's also for a long time been the bearing down of the religious police that have been known to just harass women who are seen on the streets without male guardians. So there's a lot of social pressure, as well as, of course, until this past year, 2017, there was a driving ban, so women physically couldn't get anywhere. Sidewalks and sidewalk culture and walking culture is also, due to the heat, not really present in Saudi Arabia. So they're really limited to being in the house for the most part, whether culturally or just logistically. There was nowhere for them to go. Mm-hmm. And finally, until late 2017, it was illegal for them to attend the gym, which is something that was, you know, not prohibited for men. So even if they
right.
could get out of the house, they had nowhere to go to work out.
And so does your friend Musa, does she attribute her weight issues to this? Does she recognize this? Is this at the root of her problem? Does she talk about this?
Yeah. I describe a little in the piece, but we've had many conversations. There's a little bit of resignation.
Mm-hmm.
She's in her 60s, and she sort of has never had access to physical activity. She admits, you know, I'm in my house all day. She lives in a small, cramped apartment, very few windows even, and there's nowhere for her to go to work out. And she's going to the doctor being told, like, you're at risk for diabetes,
mm-hmm.
your bone density is suffering, your weight is going up, and then she goes back to her small apartment and has very little at her disposal to do. And so it's really a sort of resignation on her part.
So when did you meet a woman named May Abulfaraj?
Oh, yeah. May, I met along with a group of really incredible women in February of last year at this like underground expo at a small boutique in a mall. So they had draped curtains over the front windows of this little shop and made sort of this covert fitness demonstration for women in Jeddah, where they taught women how to do stretches, small things that they could do in their home to sort of get fit. And then through that, they were promoting their women's running group. So
mm-hmm.
these women are, you know, very brave and really avant-garde in that they've been, since last year, running outside at night. They created a running group they call Bliss, and mm-hmm. They've been slowly building up their endurance on the hot streets after hours.
This is Martha Plimpton, and I am speaking with Sarah Aziza, who's a contributor for Harper's Magazine, about her latest piece in the January issue called Body Politic, about women and exercise in Saudi Arabia. So let's talk about May Abulfaraj for a second. She came up with this idea for Bliss Run, right? This
mm-hmm.
running club. Was she concerned about backlash and from men and possibly even from the government?
Yeah, so that was sort of in the background of everything that they did, although they insisted, they were really optimistic, they were very careful, they chose secluded areas behind a hotel on the Corniche in Jeddah, for example, well after dark.
Wow.
You know, they,
so
they,
it's essentially like an underground exercise club.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. They're starting to kind of gain a little bit of status. It's an interesting balancing act because they wanted to promote what they were doing via Instagram and social media to reach out to women who didn't have any other sort of physical outlet. These are women who had traveled abroad and seen mm-hmm. women in every other respect much like them exercising in public on the streets. And this was their way of sort of pushing back, but they had to be extremely careful.
And you attended some of her classes. Who are some of the other women who attended?
Sure. So I attended that one class, and then I went for a run with them on the streets. Mm-hmm. So there, I spoke with several of the women there. Many of them are showing up in their long black cloaks, their abayas. They had mm-hmm. to find a way to sort of keep from tripping over them mm-hmm. and try and keep their hair covered as they jogged. They're mostly housewives, similar to Umusa, if not mm-hmm. a little younger. And for most of them, this was their first time in their entire lives, that women in their 40s, 50s, it was their first time ever doing physical activity, certainly in public. Mm-hmm. And you could just see the pride on their faces and sort of this look of pride and disbelief of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. And also, mm-hmm. I can imagine surprise in their own capabilities, too. I mean, it must feel wonderful, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So
you know,
tell
they
us-
were so excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, they were just, some of them were so excited to tell me that they had managed that day to run 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
Many of them hadn't, you know, even been able to keep up 30 seconds before they started training with these women. So it was quite
an
exciting thing to watch unfold.
And just tell me quickly about the tracksuit that May has developed.
Yeah, a few of the founding women customized, they designed and commissioned these special, like, tracksuit jumpsuits. That were all one piece, that were baggy and had arms and legs that were sort of separate. So it looked a little bit like a flying squirrel if you, uh-huh. you know, were to stick out your arms.
Mm-hmm.
But it kept them covered, and it looked a lot like an abaya with their arms down, but it kept them from tripping the way the other women were when they were wearing traditional abayas. I was wearing a traditional abaya. It's not easy to run one.
Yeah, I can imagine. So when did you first hear about the underground gyms that women have been starting? There's this woman, Hala Alhamrani, who started this mm-hmm. organization called Fight Like a Girl. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, she was really one of the founding members of this underground network of women's gyms. And so as I was reporting it out, I was hearing her name mentioned with a lot of respect and awe by other women who are just starting to get into it. So Hala is in her early 40s, and she's a lifelong athlete. She went to college in the United States, so she was able to really get into it there. But she started teaching kickboxing classes out of the behind her family's home. They had a little like pool house area there, mm-hmm. and so that was about 15 years ago. And it's grown into this lucrative business, and she's got 20,000 followers on Instagram now.
Wow.
Teaches dozens of women every week, and is really one of the formative figures in this underground movement.
And it's cool that it's kickboxing. Does she do regular boxing too, or just the kickboxing?
She's actually doing something new every time I talk to her. She's recently got her bungee certificate.
Oh, great.
So she's starting to teach bungee lessons, mm-hmm. bungee fitness, CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
She works out 1.5 hours, 2 hours every day before she starts her day-long training session. She's really got a passion for movement like I've almost never seen. Really fierce woman who's in it to really train and sculpt women's bodies to be strong.
I'm Martha Plimpton, and I've been speaking with Sarah Aziza, a contributor for Harper's Magazine, about her latest piece for the magazine called Body Politic. The current King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, he announced that the ban on women driving is going to be lifted in 2018.
Yeah.
Why do you think this has happened now?
So it's interesting. As I was reporting out this story, I was working on it for over a year, and when that ban was announced that it was going to be lifted, I spoke with my contacts on the ground, and all of them were in utter disbelief, you know, and there's been a lot of other developments. For the first time, Saudi Arabia is allowing girls to have physical education in schools. Mm-hmm. There's just been a lot of change in the last year.
Oh, so they are instituting phys ed in schools now for girls.
They are, and that was another announcement that came in the summer of 2017 that people, honestly, even those who had been calling for it for years, were surprised to see come across the line, you know, really be instituted. So a lot of these things remain to be seen. Women haven't been given the right to drive, but they're promised it will begin in June. And so the cynical interpretation is, you know, Mohammed bin Salman, this young prince who's been sort of from the top down instituting this flush of reforms. Mm-hmm. Some say it's all economic interest. He's really interested in rebranding Saudi Arabia as a attractive place for liberal Western capital, for investors, as a forward-thinking kingdom within the Middle East, as a place, that you know, trying to wash away this image that we all have of this oppressive state. Some women say, you know, it's a ploy, or he's trying to rev up the economy by diversifying its non-oil sectors and try and pull in more women. There's a lot of economic reasons, but frankly, a lot of the women I spoke to would say, you know, whatever his motivations are, this is change that is very welcome and very exciting. And frankly, it's been held up by this executive top-down control, it wasn't instituted in a democratic way.
Right.
So perhaps the reforms will have to come from the top down in some instances as well.
Right, right. Well, how did feel when you told her about these running clubs and this? is she interested in taking one of Halal's kickboxing classes? Is she into maybe joining up?
She may be interested, she said, in starting to walk outside. She thought I was crazy, most of the things I was describing to her. But, you know, she started to warm up to the idea of perhaps the sidewalks, there might be some places that she might be able to have enough privacy to walk outside. That's about as far as she's willing to go. Like I said, it's really entrenched attitudes, the older population. But the Saudi population, 60% are under 30 years old. So this young energy is really...
it's going to be hard to keep that energy pent up, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this. This is really fascinating, and it's really cool to hear about women in Saudi Arabia being able to experience their own bodies and their own ways and exercise and, you know, feel that kind of strength. It's awesome, and I'm really glad to read about it. I'm Martha Plimpton.
Wonderful.
And I've been speaking with Sarah Aziza, a contributor for Harper's Magazine, about her latest piece for the magazine called Body Politic. Thank you so much for coming today, Sarah.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.